This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to a Neuroscient episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Woo! Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Ka-ching.
Oh, and right on.
Okay, there he is.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll start without him. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
You just threaten to start without him every time from now on, and he'll just...
And he'll just magically appear when it's almost time for music, for Age of 70 to hit his music. So while we wait for Age of 70 to get settled in, I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. I'm joined by Agent 70, who I just said is just joining the chat, and at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
That's and me.
Also from his website, popculturenetwork.com. Make sure to check that out.
But seriously need some updates. I'm finally getting caught up on my email. I can start doing some updates on the site again. I'm down to like 107 emails.
Yeah.
I actually need to pay attention to. I keep weeding out like all the, you know, Kmart ads and the Lowe's newsletter and all that stuff. And I'm down to about 107 of like comic news and previews and PDFs and all of that stuff to go through.
Yeah, I need to get back to putting new stuff up on the site when I get emails. Because like, there's not enough hours in the day. But that's just excuses.
Yeah, well.
Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. And there's also a new podcast I debuted on the website this week. It's the Fresh Coast Click, which is our West Coast.
Oh. Wrong one. Well, it's sports. That counts.
Yeah, it was their first episode was about sports. And it's our buddies out on the West Coast. I think they're in, I believe, Seattle. Somewhere out there. So go check that out. It's on Stitcher and iTunes. And, of course, just search for theclicknation.com, and that feed will have the Fresh Coast Click, the Click Nation Podcast, and Comic Book Chronicles. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google+. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. If you ever have any feedback to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com.
Agent 70, I can hear you, but you're very faint.
Got it. Coming in loud and clear, am I? Or not?
Yeah, that's better.
Nice. Sorry for running late, fellas.
No problem.
I'm going to stop with the effects now. It's back to you.
I thought that was actually Agent 70 doing.
Thanks for covering.
That was me.
Oh, nice. Let's see. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on Twitter, Facebook, whatever social media sites you like to use. Also, remember, we are part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Shout-outs to Classic Materia on Twitter, who did the hosting duties for me last week. I tried watching the episode last Friday, but since I had had it on the speakers on my laptop. Every time Agent 70 did the doorbell ring, my girlfriend's dog started barking, going crazy. So I had to stop it. So I will try.
Sorry,
to
watch it was a spoiler-filled episode.
I'll try to watch it this weekend. And our other co-host, Roddy Cat, is not with us tonight. He sends his regards, and he hopes to be on next week. But he did a great job of providing us with the news for this week. So with that, we will segue over to the comic book news of the week. First up, we have Charles Soule signed an exclusive contract with Marvel Comics.
No!
Yes!
No!
Make mine Marvel.
Listen, the guy had a pretty good following over at DC, so I can understand and feel where Dirt's coming from.
Well, he also wrote like half their books.
Right.
Well, the good news is, I guess they worked a deal out with Marvel and DC where he's going to get to end his run of DC books the way he wants to end them. So his DC work will actually continue through, and I guess it will complete March of 2015. So you've got a little ways.
Mm-hmm. Still don't like it.
And he was already taken off. I don't know if he's taken off is the right word, but he'd
come off of, right?
Come off of Batman or Superman, Wonder Woman. So that what left him Swamp Thing and Red Lanterns, which I've enjoyed Red Lanterns. So good for him. And the exclusive won't affect his Letter 44 with Oni Press.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes. Right.
Let's see. Guardians of the Galaxy, James and Sean Gunn talk spinoffs, Stan Lee's original cameo, female superheroes, the status of Thunderbolts, and more at Dragon Con, which was in Georgia last weekend.
Yes, and our own Roddy Cat was there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We'll have to get him to give a recap next week. So we'll save that talk for next week. So Wesley Snipes has been in the news saying he wants to play Blade again. Of course he does, because
he's got bills to pay.
He's got a tax bill to worry about.
That's right.
Who wouldn't want to be a part of the Marvel Universe, hopefully, if they decide to pull the Blade character into the cinematic universe? I believe all it is just rumors started by him talking to some people saying, hey, I'd like to play him. So, of course, everyone says, oh, is Marvel going to do a Blade movie?
Well, you know, he worked for The Rock. How long has he been talking about doing Black Adam?
Well, he's just been talking about doing a superhero for DC.
Yeah, but he mentioned Black Adam a couple times that he really wanted to do.
I was going
to
say it was Shazam, or is it Black Adam? Is it Jon Stewart? Is it Luke Cage? Speaking of which, so yes, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, will be playing Black Adam in a Shazam movie. And the speculation is this movie going to be a part of the Justice League, Man of Steel, Batman universe, or is it going to be something different? Because allegedly the tone of the movie is going to be fun and adventurous and not doom and gloom and no fun like the Man of Steel and Batman v Superman.
I just hope John Cena gets to play Shazam.
I read that somewhere. I got a kick out of that.
Our own, William Bruce West tweeted that to me today when I was saying if Rock is going to play Black Adam, then whoever plays Shazam has to be a pretty physically imposing person to be able to stand toe-to-toe with The Rock. He was quick to come back and say, Cena!
I'd watch that movie.
See it.
Yeah, he's goofy. He basically plays a superhero.
If you need an adult to play the role of an 8-year-old kid trapped in a muscle-bound body, I mean, I can't think of anyone better than John Cena to play that role. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or am I the only one watching wrestling?
No. I mean, I've been out of wrestling for a while, but I'm still familiar with, you know, with Cena's character. I know that he recently had the stuffing beat out of him by a certain Brock Lesnar, but
that was fun. All right. Anyway, back to comics.
Back to comics. Let's see. Prison Break stars to reunite as villains on The Flash.
I thought that was cool. I saw it. I didn't watch Prison Break, but I recognized the actors, and I'm glad to see that they have an occasion to get back together again on the same series.
Oh, I saw the news, but I didn't click on any of the links to see who the people were. I didn't watch Prison Break either, so I'll just find out whenever those episodes of The Flash air.
So no one knows who they're actually playing?
I guess I can let's click on the link and see.
Okay, well, nobody knows. Just asking.
And this is coming from Comic Book Resources.
And you're planning on watching The Flash, right?
Yeah, I'm going to watch The Flash. So Dominic Purcell has been cast as villainous Mick Rory / Heatwave. Okay, I can see that.
Heatwave.
So he'll join his previous co-star Wentworth Miller on the upcoming CW drama. So Miller was cast as Leonard Snart / Captain Cold. So they both will be part of Rogues Gallery. Or Rogues.
Mm. Rogues.
Rogues.
The Rogues.
For God's sake, don't say Rouge.
That's a whole different type of story.
That
there.
Is an old, old, old pet peeve of mine. But anyway, moving on. What do we got here?
Next up is Marvel teams with Stomp Out Bullying for Anti-Bullying Awareness Program.
Yeah, they're doing a bunch of variant covers for October. Is it October or November? One of those months, they're going to do a bunch of variants there.
Right.
The Stomp Out Bullying variant.
So keep an eye out for that as my eye starts itching. Let's see. DC Entertainment actively pitching a Supergirl TV series with Michael Green, whoever that is. So supposedly I saw something saying it wouldn't be on CW. So, and I think that news actually just broke today. So, well, that's something to kind of keep an eye out going forward.
Michael Green. Who is Michael Green?
No idea.
John Buscema.
I was about to say you skipped over. Hoo-ah!
Al Pacino?
Yes! Go ahead.
Al Pacino would do Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or another Marvel movie. Has he been in a Marvel movie?
No. No.
The reason I skipped this is because this is just like the Blade news. Yeah, I'd love to do a Marvel movie. Oh, let's go post this non-news.
Right, but at the same time, even though Al Pacino hasn't done, really quality movies for a while, he's still Al Pacino as opposed to Wesley Snipes. You know, Passenger 47 and Blade, pretty much it.
Okay, Michael Green. He is a writer. He did Everwood, Jack and Bobby, Kings. He was a producer on. He's doing Gotham. He was on. He was a producer on Smallville. Heroes. He was a writer on Smallville. Looks like maybe he wrote some of the Smallville season 11 comics.
Okay,
if I'm reading this correctly. So he's tied in with a lot of that genre type stuff. Let's see. Oh, he did some for Superman Batman, the series from the old 52. And worked on the new 52 reboot of Supergirl. He worked on the first 12 issues. So that's probably why he's got a tie in there with Supergirl. So there you go.
Cool.
Gotcha.
So he's not an actor. I was trying to think, like, what actor? The only guy I could find was born in, like, 1933, and I was pretty sure that's not the actor that's going to be on Supergirl.
That's funny.
All right, so what else news do we have?
Cool.
John Buscema, Silver Surfer, gets the IDW Artist Edition treatment.
That's pretty cool.
Those are nice books.
They are. Do either of you own any?
Yeah.
I've got the Simonson one. It's
what are they just art books, I'm assuming, right?
No, they're reproductions of the original artwork from certain comics. So, for example, the one that I have is the Walt Simonson one, where they reproduce the original art from, you know, Beta Ray Bill's first appearance and Simonson's, you know, the beginning of Simonson's Thor run. And I think one other issue or two other issues with that, and you know, you get to see really the raw artwork before, you know, any embellishment or any coloring. So it's pretty cool.
And they're big.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're reproduced so that you can see a lot of the fine detail. I'd go dig it out, but it's somewhere in there.
I don't think they're quite as big as the original Bristol board pages. They're smaller than that, but they're still big. You can see a lot of detail. So, there you go.
Cool. There's a couple of more recent news. What is this? DC Comics relaunching the Secret Six. Isn't this break today? Or yesterday?
Today.
It was today. Because I was caught off guard. I was like, whoa, comic news today.
Yeah, it happens.
That's funny.
Who's in it?
Stitz, well, at least from the cover of the number one issue, Stitz from Gail Simone's Birds of Prey, and some other person. I don't know anything about this Secret Stitz, so.
Yeah, I'm kind of lost.
You won't get too much from me.
Oh, it looks like Catman, who was in the old Secret Six. Yeah, that's kind of the point of him. Weird. Okay, so character designs, covers by Dale Eaglesham, Ken Lashley doing artwork. Simone did reveal that her previous Tumblr statement that Catman is bisexual will be canon for this series. You're going to see right away what Catman's about, she told the LA Times. I don't want to reveal too much because it's part of his character and part of his story to unfold and tell these things through the story.
Okay. Huh.
She teased that this will be a very dangerous, sexy book.
Okay.
I think I'm done.
Ah!
I saw you.
I don't. Yeah, a sexy book about Catman is, I don't think, on my agenda.
High comedy. That is high comedy.
Huh.
That's funny.
Okay.
And there's going to be an Avengers Crows novel written by Guardian of the Galaxy's Dan Abnett.
Yes, sir.
To come out right in time for Avengers Age of Ultron.
God, I can't believe that's already coming up.
Didn't he do the Groot and Rocket Raccoon novel that just came out a little bit ago?
Say it one more time.
Didn't he do the Rocket Raccoon and Groot prose novel that just came out?
Was it a novel or was it just a...
The hardcover novel. Wasn't it a novel?
You got me.
Well, let's see here. See if I can find it.
I know they did a... I think he did the Rocket and Groot, like...
Rocket Raccoon and Groot, Steal the Galaxy prose novel. Hardcover, $24.95. Yeah. It's a prose novel. Marvel's first original prose novel featuring the stars of Guardians of the Galaxy. These are not the Avengers or the Fantastic Four. In fact, they're barely even famous. But Rocket Raccoon and the faithful Groot are the baddest heroes of the cosmos. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, he just did that novel. So I guess it did well enough that they're they're pushing for more.
Yeah. Okay. And plus his Guardians 3000 will be coming up next month or this month or pretty soon.
All right.
So there's that.
Oh, cool. So there's a couple of I popped over to the Bleeding Cool site and I noticed that there's a couple of stories. They may have broken today. One of them is Arrow, the TV show Arrow, casts Matt Nable as Ra's al Ghul. Unfortunately, it's not Liam Neeson, but another actor, Matt Nable, who's playing Ra's al Ghul in Arrow. So, you know, for anyone that was hoping that Liam Neeson might reprise his role.
Well, yeah, that was going to happen.
You know, too bad. So sad. There is an article here that states, and, you know, it's Bleeding Cool, so you have to take it, you know, at, you know,
grain
with a grain of salt sometimes. Shazam, the movie, has a screenwriter, and it will not be part of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. You know, it might be off on its own while DC stays losing. Wah, wah, wah.
I like how DC seems...
Shout out to Eclectic.
I will give them credit for just going off and doing their own thing. But, you know, Marvel wants all their stuff to be tied together, like, you know, TV series or the movies. DC's like, just do it the other way. We'll have The Flash and Green Arrow on TV, but then we'll also have Constantine that has nothing to do with them, and then we'll also have, I was about to say iCarly, was it iZombie? iZombie and whatever else, Supergirl will be something totally different again, probably.
Said iCarly.
Alright. So that is news.
Cool.
Is this the news that nerds need?
Yes, it is.
The majority of the news was provided by news nerds need.
Follow them on Twitter.
Yes. So the big, I guess it would be safe to call it the big book out this week would be Death of Wolverine number one.
Well, it, not... For Futures End Swamp Thing? I thought for sure that would be big. What?
There's only so many Future End books to choose from.
Yeah, I mean...
That's true.
I mean, Original Sin number 8 is out this week, so I guess that might be right up there.
Forgot about that.
You know? But yeah, I guess Death of Wolverine is probably the big launch book this week.
Which you can read review on theclicknation.com.
There you go.
There we go. So as Dirt searches for the cover for that.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Ah!
I thought that's what you had your head
down. No, actually, I was reading Twitter.
We're out of practice.
So
we're coming off the Labor Day weekend holiday here, folks, so bear with us.
So Death of Wolverine is a 4-issue limited miniseries. It's coming out weekly, so... It will run through the month of September, and at the end, Wolverine will be dead.
Yay.
So, I kind of have a gripe with this whole Death of Wolverine thing. I don't actually... The start of this miniseries is a nice one. I just feel like Wolverine, the character, his comics... including Wolverine and the X-Men and his Wolverine solo series, have been, like, limping along trying to get to this point.
Right. Right, because they announced like so far ahead. Exactly.
Yeah.
Same thing with the death of Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, they had a 6-issue series, and it's like it didn't happen in the 6-issue series. You had to get through the 6-issue series to go back to the regular series to then have it happen.
Like, I finally just gave up reading the Wolverine book. Because it was like 3 months to die, 2 months to die, then all these fill-in artists were...
Yeah, that story was pretty bad.
Yeah, the story was bad.
Yeah, it was just bad.
Yeah, Businessman, Sabretooth, and whatever little crew that Wolverine had compiled for himself. And I don't even know what happened with them, and I don't really care, because more than likely they're not even going to be involved in this book. In this book, I mean the Death of Wolverine. So anyway, you can pick this up... as a new reader and understand what's going on. Wolverine does not have a healing factor anymore. He believes his enemies are going to find out, and it's going to be open season on Wolverine. And so he has some enemies come after him in this issue. One notable being Nuke, who is a Captain America villain, and I guess he's tied to Weapon Plus, I guess it's Weapon Plus program.
I thought Nuke had just been recently blown up in Captain America. I was very surprised to see Nuke.
The reason you think that is because it actually happened. He was blown up in Captain America, which I pointed out in my review. So why is he here with a beer belly?
Yeah.
Looking very country in his wife beater.
Definitely, definitely. Did you read the notes at the back of the book?
Yeah.
So I saw, I was about to say, Soul and McNiven get into some of the creative and artistic choices they make in this book. And I read these notes regarding Nuke's appearance, and I kept thinking, they just blew him up in Remender's cap. What is going on? Hello, continuity.
I'm sure they'll explain away, like, that happened after the events in Death of Wolverine number one or whatever. Marvel just doesn't care about, doesn't stress continuity that much anymore.
Well, they do and they don't. That's the thing. You know, they do it when it's convenient to them, and that's the way it is.
I'm like, they probably could have picked some other random outlaw or not vigilante, but...
Well, I think they wanted to pick someone who was Weapon Plus, you know, who was part of the Weapon program, so... you know, that part makes sense at least, but still, you know, there's other people in this Weapon program that they talk about. Why not, you know, bring them in?
Well, is Nuke the most exciting character you can bring in for this story?
No.
So. Or is it just he's good fodder? Like, he's the one that you can kill in the course of the story to...
Yeah, and then he doesn't even kill him.
Well, not yet.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't killed Nuke. Well, I guess you're still saying not yet.
Yeah.
So, at least Steve McNiven art, along with Jay Leister doing the inks, and Justin Ponster on art, or colors, I mean. So the book looks fabulous. And I did enjoy the writing style that Charles Soule, the new Marvel Wolverine architect, displayed. Supposedly they have Wolverine-related material all the way to 2016, I think they said.
Yikes.
And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, bringing him back. It's just, you know, related material tied to him.
Right, tied to the story and the
ramifications. Well, it's because this is the Age of Ultron universe Wolverine that's going to die, and then they're going to go back and get the real Wolverine back from the timeline, and it'll all be taken care of.
Right.
I like that. I'm going to use that when I rant on Twitter after the show.
Hey, well, you say you like that. That kind of scares me.
Ah!
Well, I like that that's a hanging plot thread to be used later.
Not that you like the idea.
Yeah, I don't like the idea. I just like that you
because you're scaring me there.
I like that you found that plot hole. Plus, I hated Age of Ultron. Ugh. Anyway, so we have Dork Geek is watching and tweeting at us as he says, Logan deserves to die. I hope he burns in hell. He just gets drunk and stabs.
Do you guys get the reference?
Oh, yeah.
I hope he burns in hell.
You got to read that in Samuel Jackson voice.
Exactly. That's funny. That is funny. I was about to say it's not the first movie reference that we're gonna make on this episode tonight.
Oh, really?
Not the first.
Second, huh?
Yeah, there's gonna be a second one. That's right. Where's the drama? All right. So. Did you read this? What did you think of this book?
Death of Wolverine?
Yes.
Meh.
I was kind of indifferent to it as well.
I'm just kind of honest. I don't believe it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just trying to figure out what the hook of this is, and I'm just having a hard time trying to figure out why this is supposed to be important, because obviously this is not the end of the character, you know.
Right.
I mean, he's too popular a character to just disappear, so obviously he'll be back at some point. I'm just there's got to be something more to the story than just the fact they're killing off Wolverine. I just don't see what it is right now, so I don't know. I just read it and I was like, okay, you know, nothing really happened, and the artwork is beautiful, I'll say that. One of the prettiest looking books I saw this week.
So there's that. What did we think of Original Sin number 8, the culmination of Marvel's summer event until the fall event, Axis, begins?
Which is going to start, because we're already on the road to Axis, I think starting this week or last week, right?
It started last week.
Right, we're already on the road to Axis. So,
the one thing I enjoyed in this book, and this is really, I mean, for the most part, they kind of telegraphed, I think, what was going to happen with Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And not to get into too many spoilers, but the eyeball thing was just kind of like, really? But the one thing I did enjoy is when they're leaving the moon and they're going, hey, didn't we forget somebody? And there's Thor standing on the moon trying to pick up his hammer and he can't lift it.
Yeah.
That was really the only thing that got a rise out of me in this issue.
No kidding.
Thor being unworthy is like the only like noteworthy thing to me that even happened in this series.
Really? Well, there's a couple things without spoiling too much, but we already have an idea, you know, a general idea. They haven't really covered up a lot of the outcome of Original Sin because of, I guess, you know, because of solicits and because of some articles that have come out since. But I guess the role, maybe not the mantle of the Watcher, but the role of the Watcher has been passed on. And, you know,
even that was kind of, to me, that, like, it's not clear. Yeah, it's not clear. That's
right. Well, they leave it up there. It's probably going to be explored in the new Winter Soldier.
What did they call him? They called him a different name.
The Unseen.
The Unseen.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Watcher, he is the one that you don't see, I guess, as opposed to the one who does see.
He's the Watcher that doesn't. Yeah, he's what I was going to say. He's the Watcher that doesn't appear at the last second to save you. That's pretty much it. You know? So that's what I got out of it. You know, there's a couple of moments in this book that really, really felt like, you know, Daniel Caffey and, you know, Colonel Jessup, because, you know, that's all I seem to hear.
But there's no Wolverine.
You know,
I have to say Wolverine a couple more times. Wolverine.
Right.
That's because Dort Geek is threatened. Or no, that was
That was Dort Geek.
Yeah.
See, this is what I hear. This is what I hear. You know.
We can slightly hear that.
Right.
Yeah, I can't hear that very well.
You know, well, I was just going to say, that is some dialogue from, you know, that is the monologue from A Few Good Men. That's what I heard, because I could hear Fury speaking in Jack Nicholson's voice. You know, what I do saves lives. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. That's all I heard this entire issue. And I guess it's been like that for a while now. So, you know, they wanted to have Fury go out in a blaze of glory, and they do have, you know, and there is a continuation to his story. I need to turn that down now. Anyway. You guys were saying that, you know, the book really didn't, you know, affect much. I think the biggest downside of this book was that the villain, while I guess you could arguably say that Fury ended up kind of carrying part of the villain's role in this. You know, the Midas and what's her face, the daughter. It was just very, you know, they were just thrown in there, and the orb. You know, I had a lot of pages where I was just reading it and thinking, I don't care what happens to this character. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah, the choice of, was it Mr. Dr. Midas?
Yeah.
And the eyeball guy was kind of lackluster. The unseen, the mindless ones? Like, who the hell are they?
Well, no, the mindless ones are old school Marvel characters, and I liked their twist. Because all of a sudden they became mindful ones, not mindless ones. But, you know, in all seriousness, you know, because it was Midas, you know, Midas had, like, this big role to play, and he was he ended up being kind of the big bad that needed to be defeated. You know, it was just very, you know, it was very weak for me, like, in terms of story impact. So in that sense, I understand and sympathize with you guys when you say, yeah, you know, what really happened in this you know, in the story, you know, other than, I guess, you know, sowing more seeds of discontent among the heroes. You know, no one trusts anybody and all that stuff, so.
Dirt Geeka says, why the hell did Fury Sr. become Hal Jordan with the karmic ending? Thor got defeated by Whisper. Dr. Midas got the Bay Megatron ending because Fury is even more of a voyeur than Uatu now. Uatu Fury standoff was lame.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
So that was Original Sin 8.
Yes, kind of ho-hum.
Yeah, I guess everything will be picked up in future storylines in the Marvel Universe. That's all we can assume, I guess.
Right.
So,
what do we got next?
Who wants to throw one out there?
Gotta get my list back up.
Okay, if I can find it here. Here's one. This is gonna be my non-superhero book for this week. This is called Number One.
Ooh.
And this is a small press. If you've ever seen Indie Comics Magazine, this is from that same company. And it's basically the story of a comic shop owner. This is his semi-autobiographical account of what it's like to own a comic shop, run a comic shop, try to sell comics. And it kind of goes through, you know, talking about the big expansion, late 80s, early 90s, and the death of Superman, and then by the late 90s, like, the market had fallen out, and place was about to close, and then people started to come back again, and talks about why he loves comics and why he got into running a comic store and how it ruined his marriage. Actually, I don't know if it was his marriage or his girlfriend, but regardless.
No, I think it was his marriage, because I read this, although I don't, I recall maybe reading a preview of this, because I didn't read this week. I recall this, you know, isn't he retelling, you know, kind of recounting his story to someone, and he says, yes, you know, I went through, you know, all this tumultuous times with the girlfriend slash wife, and then the wife wasn't the wife an accountant? I think she was running the...
Yes. So she could understand financials.
Exactly.
She had a business degree, yeah.
Exactly. So she was able to handle the business side, and he took care of the shop, but it definitely was a strain. You know, the shop itself and the finances, especially in the 90s, caused a big strain on their relationship.
Because I think they sent us a review of it several weeks ago, and I never got around to reading it, but the print copy came, and I was like, all right, I missed my opportunity to read in advance. I better sit down and read it now.
Ah.
And I really enjoyed it. The artwork is really, really good. I mean, that's one of the things that stood out to me when I kind of flipped through it, is I was surprised at how good it actually looks, you know, because a lot of times you get something from a no-name press company, and you're just like, ooh, you know. But this one actually looks... really good. It does have glimpses here and there of the American Splendor type underground style to it, the way it does expression and facials and some of that stuff. But
right.
I mean, the book, just the actual, you know, printed book feels like a quality book. The paper is high quality stock, glossy, vivid colors. But the story, like, there's a lot of the stuff that I can especially relate to working in a, you know, a store, having sure. worked in a couple different stores, actually.
Same here.
It's just one of those things where a lot of the stuff, especially I think for customers, don't realize a lot of the stuff that employees go through and right. the stuff that goes through people's heads. So if you get a chance, if you can get a copy of number one, this is, I think, Azurn Press, Azurn Publishing, A-A-Z-U-R-N, Azurn Publishing. If you can get a copy of this, if you're a longtime comic collector, you know, especially if you go to the store enough times that you're familiar with the people who work there, you know them by name, they know you,
right.
you have those conversations. I mean, this is probably going to describe that person pretty well, because I was reading a lot of myself in this book. I was reading a lot of my boss in this book. I was reading
Definitely.
A lot of the people I used to work with in this book. So this was really good and highly recommended to anybody out there who's a longtime collector.
Yes, no, I definitely agree. I think, having worked in comic book stores in the past, I definitely understood that. I definitely remember the heights of the 90s speculation market and the lows that came right after. So, it definitely hit a lot of those notes, historical notes, and they rang very true to me. It was still very affirming, though, in terms of, in terms of his love for the genre, love for the artwork, and love for the art form of the comic book. And, that comes through. And I think that comes through in anyone that works in a comic book store, long term, because they do it because they love it.
Yeah. And so in the back, he does have a kind of a five-page mini history of comics. Maybe it's six pages. I don't know. But anyway, kind of talks about how early hero tales of Gilgamesh and the Odyssey and the Bible, and then you get into political cartoons and the pulps and the Saturday morning funnies, and then into the whole EC thing and Marvel and the underground comic scene and just kind of everything. It is, because it does quickly, cover so much stuff, and each time period has maybe a paragraph or two. There are some key things that I think he skips, and some other things that maybe he gives a little too much impact to, but at the same time, it's really good just kind of overview. If you're not that familiar, if you're kind of wondering how some of the stuff played out, if you only started reading comics in the last 10 years or whatever, and you want to know what things were like in the 70s, 80s, 90s, this does a pretty good job of kind of explaining those key moments that came and went during that time period that had a big impact on the stores. And some of this stuff, may not have been huge in comics now. Like, nowadays, if someone's getting into comics right now, you ask them about Spawn, they know there was a movie and they know there's a comic, but it's not that big of a deal,
Right.
But you have to remember, in 1992, that was a huge thing on the industry that changed the industry in major, major ways, even though nowadays it doesn't seem like, anything that really played out that well. But, the birth of Vertigo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles becoming a huge independent comic,
yes.
Diamond, putting together people to start the first free comic book day, like all of that kind of stuff is covered in here as well. So it's definitely worth checking out that backup. And like I said, it's a, five, six pages long. It's not that long. So it's a quick thing you can kind of sit down and run through and get an overview of the industry. So a lot of good stuff in here. And it's only, what, $3.99? Yeah, $3.99 book. So same price as most of that Marvel stuff you're buying. You guys buy.
Ah! We do buy it.
All right.
What's next?
What do you have, Agent 70?
All right. Let me hit my list and see. I was just responding to a tweet by Dork Geekus, that says, I guess in the 80s, George Michael could have beat Thor. I was about to hit a tweet with hashtag careless whisper. let me talk about another uneven reading experience I had this week. I'm going to talk about Captain America number 24. So 26.
You're right. 24.
I'm looking at.
You're right.
Anyway, so without spoiling what happened at the end, with the cliffhanger ending of the last issue. This issue rolls right past that. Literally rolls right past that. We do not get an immediate aftermath of that reveal, but we jump right back into the action, and Zola's ongoing plot to do something really bad to New York City, and some of it was just really, it involves a bomb, and I'm thinking to myself, really? We have senior citizen. Nonogenarian, is that what it is if someone's over 90 years old? We have a very, very old Cap running around, doing things, trying to, coordinate things, being an old Oracle from Avengers Mansion. Falcon, they're starting to push Falcon a little bit into more of the solo hero mold as opposed to being a sidekick in this book. We see Ian, Captain America's son from Dimension Z, all grown up and kicking butt, and there's a relationship that is revealed between himself and Agent 13, Sharon Carter. That was kind of obvious when you think about it, if she's still alive and they had been coexisting in Dimension Z for that time. There's definitely a maternal relationship that develops between the two. There's one problem that I had with this, and it's the issue ends on a weird cliffhanger. Somebody gets blowed up real good, or at least it looks like it, and that's how it reads. That's how it, it shows... this particular character getting blowed up, or at least apparently getting blowed up real good. And blowed up. I mean, I'm being facetious, obviously, but ultimately we have a to be continued at the bottom of the panel, and it's like, really? That's how this is ending? Taking the bomb out of the out of range of the city, and the hero sacrifices him or herself. It was a very uneven read for me. I felt very disappointed by what was happening in the book. I was definitely caught off guard, even though it wasn't a huge, huge surprise. I was still surprised that they brought a particular character back at the end of the last issue. So, I was
a U.S. agent.
I already mentioned it. I spoiled it. I did ring the bell, though.
Did you?
Like I said, I did. I did ring the bell. Maybe it's a little too late. The horse might be out of the barn. But in all seriousness, I liked the last issue. This is a very, very uneven follow-up to the last issue, so I'm not sure where this is going. This might read better in trade format, to be perfectly honest. It's not a filler issue, but I just wasn't happy with the execution. So
it's a lot of Remender stuff. Does better in trade, I believe, since he does the long form storytelling.
That could be it. Could be it.
I read this issue. It was all right. Focus heavily on Armin Zola and Jet Black and Falcon.
Right. Right, because God forbid they focus in on 90-year-old Steve Rogers.
Steve Jobs.
Well, yeah, because old people are weird and gross. I mean, you don't want to do too much with them.
Right. Although, I was about to say, I don't know if anyone read She-Hulk number 8 this week.
Not yet.
This is a candidate for my click of the week this week. Let me just talk about this very quickly. So She-Hulk number 8 has, basically, without spoiling too much, Cap Steve Rogers is being sued for something that happened a long, long time ago. And for some reason, the statute of limitations hasn't told. And Soul, you know, the practicing attorney, goes into why. And it's kind of cool. Maybe it was just the lawyer and me kind of geeking out like, oh, okay, you know, he actually did get that right. And that works. And that makes sense that, the, you know, no one's trying to pull, you know, a fast one. They actually did find a reason for, you know, a legal reason for certain things happening. And if you look at the cover that's that Dirt put up, you see She-Hulk at the center. You see Steve Rogers on stage left or right. But you also see another attorney in the Marvel Universe, Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil, who does make an appearance in this book. And it's not how you think it'll – it doesn't play out how you think it'll play out. And it's, I think this is the best part of the book. The ending and sort of how it develops, how we lead up to a confrontation between the two prominent superhero lawyers in the Marvel U.
Didn't Matt Murdock just move to the other end of the country?
Correct. Cali.
That's where this is happening. I didn't realize she was on – this book was on the other coast.
No. They travel.
Oh, they travel. All right.
You know, they take one of Stark's planes. It's literally a rendition of the plane from the first Iron Man movie. I got a kick out of that. You know, the first Iron Man movie where Rhodey is waiting for you know, Terrence Howard, Meng, is waiting for Tony Stark, and then you know, they break out into
they get drunk.
Ghostface Killer music, exactly.
Yeah.
Ghostface Killer music comes on, and you know, it's a rendition of the plane exactly from that scene. But like I said, this was a nice build up. It's a nice lead into. I don't know if it's happened before, a confrontation between the two leading superhero lawyers in the Marvel U. Like I said, it may be the attorney in me that's kind of geeking out over this particular issue and where it looks like this is going. But I enjoyed this. This is one of my candidates for Click of the Week.
Well, you know, every comic has to find its market. And maybe there is a market for comics for lawyers. Maybe that's a genre they just nobody's ever fully explored before, and maybe it's time.
Well, you know what's funny? Maybe not comics for lawyers, but comics with actual legal drama. Because come on, let's face it. How long have networks had legal dramas? You know, networks big and small, cable and broadcast television. How long have they been running, you know, retread legal dramas? Why can't, you know, they do a superhero, you know, especially with the, you know, the protagonist being a lawyer. Tried to do this with they've done it before in Daredevil to a great extent, but I always thought that Daredevil was a lot more about, you know, Matt Murdock's Catholic guilt rather than his legal prowess, you know what I mean?
I mean, the problem is, though, if you do a comic that's all about lawyers, then you've got nothing but villains fighting each other.
Ah, where is it? Where's the snare? Where's my snare?
There you go.
They've come out and said that this is the first time that they've Daredevil and She-Hulk have met up in the courtroom.
Right. I'm enjoying that. That was actually, it was actually well done. When you read it and you get to you know, the point in the story where you realize what's going on, it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
So, I see the one question I had is answered on the cover, and that's which version of Captain America makes an appearance here?
It's old Steve Rogers.
Old man. I'm going to bring up Uncanny X-Men number 25.
Okay.
The finale of The Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier.
Ooh, was it good? I didn't get a chance to read it.
Ah!
Oh, wow.
Well, I was about to say, that's a noise I haven't heard. That must have brought, you know, there must be a lot of emotions being brought up in this.
It retcon stuff, of course, but.
Oh, really?
Not in a big way to me, at least. It's more secrets of Charles Xavier coming to light. And it introduces a new mutant who, I guess, isn't a new mutant. He's new to us, the reader. Uh-huh. But he's been around for a while. And it was kind of cool just seeing the X-Men interacting with each other. You know, like the Jean Grey school and the Charles Xavier school that Cyclops runs. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler seeing each other for the first time again. And Scott and Bobby Drake get into it. Wolverine has a little funny line. Yeah, a lot of stuff that Bendis is known for, the interaction between the characters on the page.
Okay.
And so when it ends, it's sort of like left open end for, I guess, for either the Uncanny X-Men book to pick up on, or maybe some other X book, like All New X-Men, or I guess it had to be All New X-Men since that's the only other X-Men book Bendis writes, mm-hmm. To go find this mutant. So, enjoyable issue.
Okay. All right, I'm going to get around to reading this. It's interesting. Nice to see that Bacalo's back on art. I know not everyone is a big fan, but I happen to like it.
Let's hear about some Futures End books.
Please, someone tell me anyone read any of
them. All right, well, I got caught up first on Futures End itself. So I actually read all of those to get to the current point in Futures End.
Okay.
And actually, I have to say, it did start out, this series really left me cold when it started. It kept jumping around, it was showing characters that didn't matter, it was talking about stuff that I didn't care about, it was doing all these different things, and I think the problem was they wanted to introduce this world that was so drastically different, because in the Futures End world, there's been some sort of war between Earth 1 and Earth 2. Somehow Darkseid was involved, parademons and whatever, but it looks like Earth 2, from all accounts, it looks like it's been destroyed, and all the refugees from Earth 2 are now on Earth 1, but the people on Earth 1, of course, treat them like invaders and don't like them and don't want them there and whatever.
Segregation.
Well, they wanted to show the problem was that, of course, everyone has a doppelganger, and so that's what freaked everybody out, is that, you know, it's another version of you coming over from this other universe, and you know, Ego, you know, gets involved. And so this world is a completely different world as far as security and national politics, and so it's very unrecognizable from the current DC universe. And so they introduce all these different characters, I think, is this idea to show you how different the future is from the current DC universe. But the problem was, you're seeing these people for the first time. You don't know anything about them. You don't know why you're supposed to care about them. You don't know, you know, what's going on. And slowly, as the series goes on, they start folding in more recognizable characters. And then they start folding in more, you know, why is this guy not involved anymore? Why isn't this guy involved anymore? What happened to that guy? And all of this stuff starts, you know, coming out. And so once you get to maybe issue, I don't know, 12 or 13, I really found that I was enjoying it. Mm. So by the time I got to 18, which is this current issue, I enjoy it a whole lot more. And the current state of the New 52, you know, Futures End universe being 5 years in the future, it's after this war. There's some other evil entity out in space that has its eyes set on Earth in the New 52, and this story looks like it's building up to the confrontation with this being. And so I'm trying not to spoil things here by being, you know, vague. I have to say, you know, the last six issues of this that I read through were really enjoyable. So it's one of those things, I think, if you can sit down with it and get past that initial hump, you know, when you look at the first, you know, maybe 2 months worth of these books coming out, you're just kind of like, ah, oh, man, like, where is this going? Why do I care? How is this supposed to be important? Once you kind of get past, you know, that introduction of what the world is like, then it gets interesting, and I really have started to enjoy it. So Futures End, for me right now, is enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to more issues of this. So, having said that, this week we got a whole bunch of Futures End books. So, I'm going to kind of jump through. I didn't get to read all of them. I didn't get to read Swamp Thing or Earth 2, but I think I read the rest. So, I'm going to jump in here with first of all, ones that are really good. And the first one I want to talk about is Green Arrow. Now, I don't know if either of you guys read any of these.
No time.
Futures End books. Nobody? Okay. Green Arrow is, I think, the perfect example of what these crossover books should be, because it perfectly ties into what's been going on in the regular book up to this point. If you read New 52, there's some plot lines going through New 52 that actually come together in this book, having to do with Green Arrow and his supporting cast. And so it's the perfect blend of the New 52 Futures End storyline and what's been happening in Green Arrow. The two of them fuse together perfectly, and there are spoilers in the last couple issues of Futures End where characters appear and you're supposed to have thought that they're dead. You weren't going to see them anymore, and suddenly here they are back, and you're wondering, how did this happen? How did they pull it off? Why did this guy go into hiding? Where did this person go? Et cetera, et cetera. And this book actually takes place before the first issue of Futures End 1, so this lays out all of that stuff. So all of those answers you were looking for in Futures End play out here. And
how many months since Futures End started are they playing out? What's
well, I mean, it's 18 issues, so it's been, if they do 4 issues a month,
yeah,
it's been like, what, 4 months now? And a half months? So, I mean, it's been going on for a while. And you know, plus being weekly, you know, it just there's so much that they can throw in there in a short period of time, because they're basically doing 4 times the size of a normal comic every month, because they're doing it every week. So there has been a whole lot that's come out. So this one, it answers the questions from Futures End, as well as continues the elements that have been going on in the Green Arrow series. So if you've been reading Futures End or you've been reading Green Arrow, either one of those, this book plays into both of those series and does it perfectly. So this is exactly what the book needed to be to satisfy. It'll satisfy the readers of Futures End. It'll satisfy the readers of Green Arrow. You know, it blends everything together the way it should be. Grayson, for being a brand new series, it's kind of hard to, you know, play off anything that's been going on in the ongoing series, because there's only been, what, 2 issues?
Right.
So they can't really do a whole lot. But instead, what they do is they put together this really intriguing story. And the way this issue plays out is every page is a step back in time of the character of Grayson. So it starts out with him being hung in Russia as a traitor to the new Russian nation that has emerged after the Great War between Earth 1 and Earth 2. And then it starts going back in time. Every page goes back in time, and it kind of shows you events that build up to why that happens, and events that build up to his relationship with Huntress, who's not the Huntress in the New 52 anymore, but whatever. And then stuff that happened to him as Robin, stuff that happened to him in the circus. And by the time, like, it was really annoying when it first started. I was like, oh my gosh, it's going back. It's going back again. It's going back more. What the hell? But as you go back, you're seeing stuff that doesn't make sense in the first few pages starts to make sense, because you're seeing what led up to it that goes through in the past. And none of it is like retconning type stuff. It's not like they had to just randomly throw stuff in there. It's stuff that actually, a lot of it is like, this is true Dick Grayson lore from his past, stuff that happened with him as Robin and working with Batman, and stuff that happened with the circus when his parents died, and all of that kind of stuff. And on the very first page, which is technically the last page of the story because it's told in reverse, you realize that what you're seeing on that first page isn't actually what's happening, and but you only know that because of what you see of everything in the past that leads up to it. So it's, I mean, it's really hard to explain because it is such an interesting way to tell the story.
Yeah. How but, is the art good?
Oh yeah. It is. I'm trying to grab the actual print copy here.
I saw the some preview pages. It didn't look.
Stephen Mooney is the artist, who's someone I'm not too familiar with. His style, here's the one thing that I will say. His style is consistent. So when he draws, like Huntress, you recognize her on every page. Like you know, when he's drawing Dick Grayson, you recognize that that is Dick Grayson every time you see him throughout the book. So he has his characters down for who they are. You know, sometimes you get these artists on these fill-in issues and it's, you know, the look changes every page because they're just drawing some random person with long hair, some random person with short hair. But I did notice that he did a really good job of drawing that same character consistently throughout the book. It's not the most detailed, but it's not, you know, it's kind of plain, I guess, is the only thing you could really say against it. Like, it's not bad, but it doesn't jump out at you like, oh my gosh, I got to grab my pencils and copy this guy's style. You know what I mean? But it is consistent, and the characters work as you go through the book. So that one I enjoyed. I enjoyed that one quite a bit. I hit the wrong button. Just jumped out of the whole thing. If we take a look at some of the other ones, like Batwing, for instance, I'm probably the only person, one of the five people on planet Earth that read every issue of Batwing. And this really doesn't really play into the old series a whole lot. The character is there. This is more of a Batman Incorporated kind of story. I mean, I think Batwing is just the one that gets the nameplate and a couple extra pages devoted to him, just because he just ended his series, so they can use this as kind of a, you know, bookend on that series.
Hey, but it's better than last year, because he never got a Villains Month last year, did he?
Yeah, that's true, because they did so many for the Batman books. Yeah, so it's an interesting story as far as Batman Incorporated goes. Not really that much of a Batwing book, and it doesn't really do a whole lot for the Batwing character itself. But I mean, it's interesting enough, you know, it's not offensively bad or anything like that. So, you know, if you're just interested in some random Batman stuff, then go ahead. Green Lantern is one of these where they use the 5 years in the future to tell some story that they don't really have a setup for yet, and they can give it kind of this, I don't want to say ambiguous ending, but they give you this kind of unfulfilling ending because they know, because it seems like this doesn't matter. Like, this kind of betrays the whole idea of Future's End. The idea of Future's End is that this is supposed to be the new 52 universe in 5 years, and this one just kind of, the ending just kind of leaves you going, really, that's it? That's, you know, it plays more like a what if.
See,
I was about to say you hit on what my misgivings are about, you know, this whole going into the future thing and telling us what exactly how things are going to be 5 years from now. It definitely does feel like a big what if story.
Well, and that's what this one feels like. You get to the end of it and you're just like, all right, well, obviously this doesn't matter. Wow. So this is not going to be what's happening. So
wow. It seems like it was just left open to the creative teams whether their stories be a what-if type story or something that possibly could have ramifications for current books.
Yeah, and this one just... They bring back characters that you're familiar with from the Green Lantern universe, but it really doesn't matter. The same with Action Comics. Action Comics introduces a Superman. One of the things of Future's End is that Superman in Future's End is wearing a helmet. His face is completely covered. He doesn't have the cape. He's got a different manner of speaking and acting, and so people are unsure, did something happen during the war that changed him? Well, no, I'm not spoiling it yet.
Because we already know what happened, but okay, go ahead.
Well, last week's issue of Futures End told you what happened, but or maybe it was this week's. I don't know. Regardless.
He appeared last week.
Okay, so this book shows you where Superman is now and what he's up to, but it introduces a character who only exists to disappear at the end of the issue. So this character is like a one and done. You don't know where he comes from. You don't know how he got his particular powers. You don't know why really he's doing what he's doing, but he's just there. He does his stuff. He talks to Superman and then he's gone. And so it's not one of those what if like Green Lantern that doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter because it's almost like a backup story in an annual. Hmm. Like this is something that could have been like an 8-page story instead of a $3.99 with a 3D cover.
Right.
So that's kind of the problem with that one. I felt the same way with Aquaman. Aquaman, although the problem is this is a two-parter. So this actually begins in this issue, and it's going to end in Aquaman and the Others,
the Futures End.
Oh, okay.
But it's still one of those that just – it doesn't really feel like it matters. The characters – the one thing – and here's the one spoiler. Go ahead and ring the bell. This may be Aquaman from Earth 2, but it may not be. They kind of hint at it. And they kind of throw some things out there that might be the case, but it might not be the case.
So that was the one that showed up in the Justice League Dark Blight series, right?
I believe so. Forever yeah. Evil. All right, Phantom Stranger. I actually read this because I guess I don't like myself. And the problem is this: they're ending the Phantom Stranger series, right? They're ending Phantom Stranger. They ended Pandora. And now they're going to start the Trinity of Sin series, which is Pandora, Phantom Stranger, and Question all together in one book. And so this feels like the issue you would have that ends Phantom Stranger and begins Trinity of Sin, right? I mean, it's the bridge from the old series to the new series. Except the problem is it's set 5 years in the future. So is Trinity of Sin going to be set 5 years in the future? Or does this, even though it feels like a bridge between the two series, is this not going to be important? Or did they the writers just kind of forgot that it's supposed to be 5 years in the future? And does that screw with the new Trinity of Sin series? Like, I don't know, but it's not good is the problem.
Oh, no.
It's just kind of one of those things because, of course, if you've been following New 52 at all, Phantom Stranger is supposed to be Judas, who betrayed Jesus. His necklace of silver medallions are actually the silver coins, and he's been basically chained to those coins, and he has to redeem himself by being selfless, just like Jesus was, and every time he does this selfless act, he loses one of the coins. So he's down to his final coin, and he has to go back in front of the council that cursed him to see if the curse is lifted. And that's the whole premise of this particular issue. But it plays out, it's one of those things where it sounds like it could be such a deep theological type story. You could do so much with what it is. And it turns out to just be a really bad 70s horror throwback. Wow. It is just not satisfying really at all.
Wow.
Detective, where's Detective at? There it is. Detective Comics. I think this is the last one I read here. Detective is going to be the last. The problem with Detective is it plays into the zero-year story that just ended in Batman, so it feels like this should have been the story that they tell in the Batman book as opposed to the Detective book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those that, again, doesn't matter. It's not offensive. It's not bad, necessarily, like Phantom Stranger. It's not good, like Green Arrow. It's just a story that happens 5 years in the future.
Yikes.
So it doesn't really reverberate to anything other than the fact that Riddler's in it and it talks about 0 year. But otherwise, it doesn't really say anything about the future. It doesn't really say anything about Batman. It doesn't really say anything about the current state or the future state of the character. It's just, hey, we can tell a story 5 years in the future that doesn't have to connect with anything, so here's this random thing that happens.
I'm
not getting a good vibe about these Future's End books.
I mean, if you're someone who hasn't read a lot of Batman stuff, you can pick this up and read it, and it's fine. It, as a one-and-done story, you know, there's no problem with it being a one-and-done story. And it's one of those books that could be, you know, DC has this thing where creators can take characters and just do the random stuff with them. So you get stuff like Dark Knight Returns, and you get stuff like Superman Earth 1, and you get that kind of out-of-continuity, just kind of weird, random stuff that happens. And this could work as just kind of one of those weird, random, out-of-continuity stories. You know, you could give this to someone who hasn't read a Batman book in 10 years, and they're going to have no problem following it. They're going to recognize the characters. They're going to be able to understand what happens. You know, so there's nothing inherently wrong or bad. It just doesn't tie into Future's End, you know, other than the fact that it's 5 years in the future.
Wow.
So that's really the main problem with most of these books, is that they're 5 years in the future, but they're not necessarily anything having to do with Future's End, which is the whole story that they're supposed to be tying into. The Grayson is good for the way it's told. The Green Arrow is perfect. It's the book that all of these should have been. But, you know, most everything else just seems like kind of, if you really like Green Lantern, you might like the Green Lantern story. If you really like Superman, you might like that Action Comics story. But they don't, you know, they don't really feel like they're required reading for the main series, and that's the problem with having those books.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
But the covers are pretty. I mean, they're 3D, you know.
That was sufficiently depressing.
I'm going to quickly go through Rocket Raccoon number 3 and Legendary Star-Lord number 3. Rocket Raccoon, it's more of the same. People assume it's an all-ages book just because it has a talking raccoon in it, but it is not. There is some adult humor in it, which is fine. I mean,
it's low-hanging fruit.
But is it adult humor that works on a different level that kids won't understand, or is it straight up, this is not a book kids should read?
No, it's a different level.
It'll go over their heads, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Definitely a different level.
So, and when the issue ends, he's confronted by his doppelganger.
Bum, bum, bum.
But is that Missile Muskrat?
Scotty Young's killing it on art and writing duties.
Yes, it's very dynamic. The art is very dynamic. You know, there's, you know, movement is definitely, you know, expressed very well. And, you know, I was very taken with the style that's grown on me. You know, I haven't read as much of Scotty Young as maybe some other people have, but, you know, his style has grown on me, and it's definitely apropos for this type of story.
One thing I just learned today is that Scotty Young apparently lives like an hour away from me.
Okay.
Which I had no idea. We're going to see if we can get a hold of him and see if he can come to the store sometime for a signing.
Nice. Sweet. Good luck.
He has tweeted tonight that he's really sick, so.
Okay, well, I'll not
get
ask
better,
him.
Get dude.
Wait till next
better.
Week. And Legendary Star-Lord number 3, I enjoyed this issue a lot more than issue 2. This issue, Peter Quill, I'm trying to think what happened to him. Kitty Pryde helped him evade somebody. Oh yeah, he was captured by the Badoon. It's like every issue he's captured by someone, and he has to, you know, how is he going to break out this time?
Mm.
He's a gunslinger. But it's very, very good art by Paco Medina and David Curiel on colors. Kitty Pryde does a nice guest appearance as a banana. I'll let you read the issue to figure out why that is. And at the end of that, this issue, Peter Quill announces he's going to Earth, but not for a vacation and not to see Kitty Pryde, but he's got some unfinished business with Thanos.
So, is there something going on between him and Kitty Pryde, or are they just buddies?
They're dating.
Yeah, they're dating long distance.
Very long distance.
Trial of Jean Grey when the Guardians met all new X-Men.
I see.
Yeah, it was set up then. She has a thing for Peters.
Ah!
That was the joke. Yes. The joke from issue one. So, funny. I'm trying to figure out, how does he know that Thanos is on Earth, since the Guardians weren't really involved in Infinity that much anyway? Even though they're the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they should supposed to be defending Earth, but they didn't do too much defending of Earth since Thanos was able to invade Earth. And if Nick Fury is the man on the walls, isn't he supposed to stop all threats from invading Earth?
He didn't call that code red, that's all. He forgot.
This is just stuff I like pointing out. Continuity is good when it makes sense for the story.
That's right. Are we at rapid review time?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. I'll throw out a couple that I read this week. Iron Fist, the Living Weapon, number 6. Contrary to Eclectic's views on this book, I continue to dig it. The last couple of issues have been right. The last couple of issues have been on the difficult side in terms of the art. This issue is far more direct, far more clearly defined in terms of the panels and the layouts and the artwork in general. The line work was much more crisp and like I dare say more classically comic book, much more classically defined as a comic book, more so than the last few issues. We see Danny Rand at his lowest, and we see him trying to build himself back up. It's a really, you know, the storyline itself is well done. I'm enjoying it. As I said, the artwork really has been something, I don't want to call it a real detriment, but I think this issue is a big step up from where it has been in the last couple of issues. And we really see now where, you know, MX to this particular story arc. So if anyone is a fan of Iron Fist, if anyone is a fan of Matt Fraction and David Aja's Immortal Iron Fist, Kari Andrews has taken that ball here with some of those characters that were introduced in that in the Immortal series. Read this. I enjoy this. This is definitely another candidate for Click of the Week this week. Let me throw out... Did anyone read...
I'm kind of disappointed I'm not reading that anymore. I read the first issue, but it kind of didn't really do anything for me. Plus, I thought it was like a limited series, so I was like, yeah, I'll have to give that my attention.
Listen, like I said, the art does take some getting used to. I enjoy it just because I think it's well done, and I'm a big fan of the Immortal Iron Fist characters, and they really do play on that and expand upon that. So that was a definite selling point for me. Bring up Moon Knight, number 7. So this is the first issue of Brian Wood as the writer and a new artist, Greg Smallwood. And let me tell you guys something. Let me tell you, the listening and viewing audience, the book does not miss a step from the Ellis and Shalvey run. It is very good. I am enjoying this take on Moon Knight, or at least this particular aspect of his persona. The Mr. Knight, the one that runs around in a white suit, I enjoyed this book. Believe it or not, this is another one of my potential Click of the Week candidates. It's funny where I found my Click of the Week candidates. It wasn't in any of the big event books. It was in the smaller series. These particular issues this week were of quality, you know, no less, you know, well done than She-Hulk or my other candidate, Iron Fist. So I think it's cool that some of the lesser series got a lot, you know, done this week, and they're getting a lot of love from me this week in terms of potential clicks of the week. I don't want to spoil too much. You really should read it. It's kind of a one and done issue. There isn't that much spoiling, but it does track back to something that the Ellis run right at the end of the story. So there is a cliffhanger. It's going to get me to read the next issue. So, you know, if you haven't picked up Moon Knight, this isn't a bad place to start, but it's only 7 issues in. You should be able to track down issues 1 through 6 and catch up on your, that way.
I'll see if I decide to flip through this issue or not. I may give the Living Weapon Iron Fist a shot too. I do want to point out, I took the Labor Day weekend to finally start using my Marvel Unlimited.
Cool.
So I have been enjoying the Invincible Iron Man and what is that? Read Secret Warriors. Yeah, those are two. And Young Avengers are the 3 series I'm reading right now.
Cool.
I have to add the Matt Fraction, David Aja Iron Fist series to that.
Yes. Quality stuff.
All right. And the only other issue I need to add to the rapid reviews is Avengers World number 12. I'm enjoying this series now again. I wasn't quite sure what it was. It really doesn't have a purpose still. But given all that, I like how they're incorporating
because
all
they're
these different
new characters.
Yeah, all these new superhero groups from all these other nations and the next Avengers, and according to the solicits, the Doctor Doom is going to form his own team of Avengers.
Yeah. That's funny.
So.
All right. I'll throw a couple out here real quick, if I can find them.
Yeah, no, we have the Euro. Oh, go on, Dirt.
I'm sorry, what? Hello? You kind of cut out on me there.
No, I was just talking about Euroforce as the European counterpart of the Avengers they introduced in these last couple of issues. Choose Avengers World. So we've got, you know, and a reappearance by Dane Whitman, the Black Knight. So if anyone is a fan of Dane Whitman, wants to see more Black Knight in the Marvel U, pick up this book.
And the reason I brought up Marvel Unlimited is because I spent all weekend reading Secret Warriors, and then I pick up this issue, and it's like, oh, there's Sebastian Druid. I was just about to wonder what happened to some of these characters in Secret Warriors, and where are they in the Marvel U? Unfortunately, something bad might have happened to him at the end of this Avengers World number 12, but we must keep reading to see.
Yep. That's right.
Cool. Okay. Let's see here. Figment. This is the Disney series that has been turned into a Marvel comic based off the old Epcot ride. Basically, just a quick recap, the lead character here made this device. He was trying to tap into some sort of energy source and instead made a device where your imagination becomes reality. And he found himself creating Figment, the little purple dragon, and falling into the world of imagination. Whereas once he leaves, his boss comes in, sees this machine, sees the helmet, puts it on to try it, and he wants nothing but order and the end of chaos. So these giant robots appear in London in like 1918, whatever this is, and they start trying to bring order to that civilization. You have these two stories kind of going on simultaneously. And for the world of imagination, what he has to realize is that this whole world is basically created out of his mind. So when he goes through the world of nightmares, these are his nightmares of feeling inadequate, feeling like a failure, feeling horrible. All of that's coming because this is a world that's in his mind. And once he realizes that this is his imagination, once he realizes that he can take control of that, then he's able to bring himself back to the real world. And when he comes back to the real world, he finds the real world is now being taken over by these robots that are trying to bring order to everything and more or less destroying the world. So your setup then for issue 5 is going to be how he is able to defeat these other beings that have come into our world and are starting to take over. So it's gone through a real journey from the first issue that felt really whimsical and fun, and now by this issue it's getting a little more, I don't want to say it's darker or deeper necessarily, but it is more focused on that action element and less on that whimsical idea of imagination and creating whatever out of your thoughts. So it's still very entertaining. It's just turning out to be a much different series than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Tide is turning.
Justice League 33. This is continuing the Justice League's battle against Doom Patrol. And this one, basically, if you've seen any of the Justice League stuff, you know that Lex Luthor is becoming more of a part of the Justice League. And in this issue, he actually becomes a full-fledged member of Justice League under the idea that, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. They realize the only way that they can keep an eye on Lex Luthor is to make him part of the team. In this battle against Power Ring, Batman, of course, is the one who's able to figure out how to defeat the Power Ring because, of course, if you've watched, if you've read any of the stuff that crossovers, Green Lantern and Batman, he, of course, has the willpower to always defeat, Guy Gardner or anybody else because of the determination and will. He realizes that the power that comes to this power ring from Earth 3 is fear. And, of course, who's the better master of fear than Batman? I thought that was an interesting way that they dealt with the character and the way it plays out, the way that Lex Luthor gets folded into the team. That was something. It's again, one of those that I enjoyed reading, but you're only going to enjoy it if you've been reading it for the past year. This is not something that some random kid's going to be able to pick up and enjoy the story. You do have to be invested in it at this point. So kind of a plus and a minus to it as far as that goes. And then one other final book, this new one out from Boom Studios. We got the latest issue of RoboCop. Here it is. And this is continuing the storyline from the original movie. It ignores the sequels to the original movie. But going back to that old movie, you have a character, Killian, who has come back to Detroit. He's been there before. He was a villain. He was trying to smuggle guns. He got thrown into jail. He comes back now, and as OCP is trying to take over the city, convert everything over to Delta City, he's the one that decides that what the city needs is a gun registration. He wanted to take handguns out of the people's hands in order to make the streets safer. Of course, as soon as OCP makes that move, he turns against them, gets the people all riled up that how dare they come and take away all your guns. Now you people are going to be helpless and, basically turns the tide of the city against the gun registration. All of this at the same time, of course, remember, he's a felon who went to jail for smuggling guns. So what is he doing? He's actually smuggling guns into the city to sell them to the people so that they can start this armed revolution against OCP, just because he likes chaos and he likes making money off of selling guns. So they've done a good job of setting up the story where first he looks like a villain, then he looks like he might be a good guy, and then he looks like a villain, and now he looks like a total dirtbag. And caught in the middle of all this, of course, is RoboCop. At the end of the first movie, if you remember, he gets the first glimpse of his humanity and what it's like to actually be not a robot, not controlled by the corporation, to kind of strike out on his own. And so here, as the story is unfolding, you're seeing him trying to act like a regular cop. He's trying to be that officer that he's supposed to be, that he was before he became RoboCop. So a lot of times it seems like he kind of forgets that he is a cyborg. He kind of forgets that he has these abilities, that he, you know, can do more. He's trying almost to limit himself to his humanity, playing against the, you know, natural strengths that he gets from the augmentation and everything. So I think they're doing a good job of not only making this a crime drama, you know, you've got that kind of police drama, the Law and Order, Blue Bloods type of thing that's running through it, but then at the same time, they're doing a good job of looking at the character of RoboCop and who Murphy is and what it means to be human as opposed to being this machine that was built by the corporation and everything. So I really enjoy it. I think it's a good series, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this storyline plays out.
Josh Williamson.
Is that your boy?
I'm enjoying Nailbiter and Ghosted, even though I'm behind on both of them.
Yeah, Nailbiter has been really good.
Yeah. I read the first issue, and like with a couple other Image series for me, it's I'm slowly but surely trying to get caught up on them. But yeah, well, mostly... I do like, oh yeah, and, his other book, Captain Midnight for Dark Horse, I like, and I'm behind on that too. So yeah, I'm kind of a fan.
Yeah, a lot of the Image stuff, though, does play out. You know, it's written for the trade.
Yeah. So even if I'm behind, they take hiatuses, so I have opportunities to get caught up.
Yeah, if you fall behind, though, it also works to have that day to sit down and just read through everything, because you know it's going to work for that.
Yeah. I need to... with your high recommendation of the RoboCop, I probably need to give it a shot, since I enjoy his other stuff. We'll see.
Well, did you watch all the movies and everything?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I'm not familiar with RoboCop, so that would be a hindrance to me.
I would suggest, if nothing else, watch the original movie from 87 or whenever it was that it came out. I mean, not only is it a great movie, that if you're a man, I don't know how you haven't seen this movie. But you know, at the same time, that is the basis for this series. So you'll not only get to watch a great movie that you'll enjoy, but it'll also give you background for the series.
Cool.
All right.
I think we're clips. Done. Hey, yeah, clips of the week. Oh, what is going to be my click of the week?
Well, I'm going to go with number one.
Death of Wolverine number one?
No, not Death of Wolverine number one. Number one.
Gotcha.
Number one one-shot. Just thinking back over it, just reading it the way it, you know, like I said, I can see parts of myself, I can see parts of my boss, I can see parts of the people that I worked with. They just really hits home on so many things. I just really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of other people will too if they give it a chance.
I am going to go with wow. It's going to be, I'm going to say, Legendary Star-Lord number 3.
Okay, cool. And I will throw in Agent_70's click of the week is She-Hulk number 8 by Charles Soule and Javier Pulido. I enjoyed it. I had the best time reading this book. So, you know, and I'm looking forward to the next issue. It's it was a pleasant surprise Click of the Week. I was anticipating one of the bigger event books being Click of the Week, but it was nice to see some of the smaller titles come up and become my pick of Click of the Week this week.
I don't know, by the traitor Charles Soule.
A traitor to some, or a Marvel, a member of the Merry Marvel Marching Society. Isn't that what it was?
Yes, yes, it was the Merry Marvel Marching Society. He's still a traitor.
Ah!
All right. And with that, we'll start closing shop here. Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. At TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation.
Twitter.
Dirt is at PCN _ Dirt.
Read them right now.
Agent 70 is at Agent _70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And he will hopefully be with us next week to give his Dragon Con recap.
Yes.
And with that, just make sure to tune in next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on theclicknation.com.
Yes, this month is going to be full of books. Every week there's a long list of books on my own personal pull list, and I see that every week is full of books coming out, so we should have plenty to talk about.
Plus all those Future End books you got to read.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or not.
What do you think I'm going to do after we hang up here? I got to read Justice League, at least.
At least.
So, with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your ear?